हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यन्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे हे भक्ति संदर्भ अध्यायन वन अधिकारण थ्री भक्ति अलोन इज द कंक्लूजन ऑफ ऑल स्क्रिप्चर्स पेज 94 डू वी नो वेयर वी आर ऑन दिस 94
Yes, you started reading that Udhriti, but you didn't quote the Brahmabhuta Prasanatma yet at the very bottom.
Okay, so we're all the way down, okay, down there on 71. Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so we'll just read through it straight from there. Anucheda 71. Having taught Jnanamissa bhakti, he teaches pure bhakti with jnana as its byproduct in four verses while discarding jnana, right? So this is a very subtle and very important aspect in analyzing the devotional process, you know, and developing that aspect of dridha shraddha, is that one has to understand that all these other things are tools that are used, but it's not them being used as tools that makes bhakti successful. Bhakti is successful on its own. It's just natural that you're going to use a tool. You know, just like Krishna's satisfaction is what you're trying to get, but it will be manifest through the various activities of the devotees done in the various situations, which generates specific results. But it's not those situations, it's not those actions that are the real cause. It's because you're pleasing him in bhakti. So bhakti means the attitude. So in other words, you're pleasing his attitude with your attitude, right? And then, because of, you know, the three features of the Lord, therefore there's action in a situation. So the action itself is not what controls it, or the situation itself, that doesn't control bhakti. You could say, oh, but if you're not in the kitchen, you can't cook. But that doesn't mean that cooking, the principle, is not there. It exists without the kitchen. The kitchen is built simply to manifest cooking. So cooking is a real thing. You know, so Krishna's energies are non-different, but there is uniqueness there. Yes, there is uniqueness, but it's not that's what causes it. You know, that's the whole thing. It's just like, okay, you go to a very fancy shop and, you know, there's, you know, all the guards are there with their guns and everything. And you go in and look at some, you know, valuable gold or jewels, you know, sitting in a fancy seat. They give you a nice drink. You know, so many people are all around, you know, trying to make you comfortable, you know, and the gold has a certain value. But if you're walking, you know, outside and it's raining and there's mud and you happen to notice a chunk of a gold ring or a chunk of gold in the mud and you pick it up, it's not any less gold. You know, we put the emphasis because we don't have satisfaction of Krishna. Therefore, we emphasize that it's the activity being done. You know, that's why we criticize the smartas. Is that they perform the action, and because they perform the action, therefore they must get the result. That's the whole point of karma mimamsa. We don't even need God. You know, it's not important that you worship God or anything or recognize him, because unless you do work, he can't reciprocate. But the point is no, he's created this opportunity for us to apply ourselves. He's independent. He didn't have to create this. Right? And so that's there. Or on the other side is the Hajj is, oh, we don't need all this form. It's just Bhav. But the point is how do you express Bhav? So you can say, well, you know, but it's about Bhav, but who's Bhav? They're talking about their Bhav. That's the whole point. The Sahajiyas are completely self-centered. They talk about Radha Krishna, but it's about what they're experiencing and about you appreciating their experiencing that, and therefore they're superior. Just like the Smartas, I do the ritual more technical and that than you, so therefore I'm superior. So it's all about themselves. One is on my bhav, and the other is on my situation and my action. So it's always about themselves. So the sat, the chit, and ananda is always about themselves. Bhakti means it's independent because it's about the soul's mood of relationship with Krishna and expressing that relationship, that you know, that with that affection to whatever degree that they've developed. You know, even if it's in the beginning stages of devotion, still there's that mood of doing this to please Krishna. That is what's then reciprocated by Krishna. And so we express that through the forms and the situations, and he reciprocates through forms and situations because it's all him. But we have to remember the situation, the sat and the chit are subservient to and for the expression of ananda. On their own, what's the point? Does that make sense? So it's not the action that's important. You can say, no, no, it's the action that's important. Let's say I take my, you know, I take a nice board, I set it up, I make it straight with the counter, I get my knife out, I sharpen it up, it's all really good, you know, like that. You know, I sit, you know, in the proper way connected to the board, you know, like that, or I'm standing like that, I got my knuckles, you know, perfectly curled in. I take my knife, I put it against my knuckles, I put it on the board, and then I start, you know, like that, you know, the top cuts can do that. But there's no vegetables there. There's nothing being cut. Is anything being accomplished other than my false ego? So that's the whole thing, is because I want to show up, therefore I'm doing that, but it's accomplishing nothing. So we have to understand it always goes back to that point. So if it's not Krishna's satisfaction, it's ours. So all of them are there, but when we do it, it's in a perverted state. Only in bhakti is in its natural state. Therefore, because it's in its natural state, therefore the forms in that are real. And in the unnatural state, because it's about ourselves and our benefit, either in karma or jnana, then it is unreal because it doesn't give any real results because it's not the soul. It's all connected with the body and the benefits of the body. Does that make sense? So we have to appreciate here is that jnana misra bhakti means you're using the form of jnana because you have an attraction for that form. But you're using it in Krishna consciousness, so then becomes jnana misra bhakti. But the point is jnana is simply a byproduct. So since you have bhakti, you want to express, if the field to express it is jnana, that field is a byproduct of bhakti. You know, just like if you're feeling hungry, then going into the kitchen and finding something to eat, that's the byproduct. It's because you're hungry, you're going in the kitchen. If you weren't hungry, you wouldn't go in the kitchen. So we have to see it's the other way around. We're conditioned to think that it's always, you know, from here it goes to there. We take it that I am matter. Therefore, my situation, my action, therefore I got the results. Therefore, that is happiness. But it's actually your desire and drive for happiness is the cause, not these other things. These are just situations through which you can manifest it. Does this make some sense? Yeah. So it's very important to be able to appreciate and be able to separate this, because then everything becomes very easy, because you say, oh, it's so technical. No, it's not. Is it about yourself or it's about Krishna? If it's about Krishna, then how are you going to express that it's for Krishna through certain activities that are done in certain situations. Right? To do the action, you need a situation. Therefore, the Krishna's satisfaction is the primary. Then secondary to that will be the action performed to gain that satisfaction that way. Now that action has to be performed in a particular environment with particular, ingredients. So then that's tertiary. Right? So the bhakti, to please Krishna, is the primary. The secondary is the actions that are performed, and the tertiary is then the field in which it's performed. Does that make sense? So that's why you have is that Krishna has a desire for a particular kind of rasa, and that produces the devotees. You know, let's say that the mood of raja, so that produces that, therefore, that's the reason, the manifestation of the devotees. Now, to support that, the Kriya Shakti then manifests that, you know, that goes about that. But the thing is that's coming out of the situation that they are the forms and all that from the Sandini. That the Sandini Shakti will manifest the specific forms, the specific place, that specific mood of Braja Bhakti. You know, in sweetness, and that will be then there. But we know that it's being done through the Kriya Shakti, but it's happening because of Krishna's desire. Yes? No? You're okay? Yes, please.
It's an interesting phenomena that causation is multi-leveled. And yes. Of course, first it was introduced in the Bhagavad Gita in the Dhyana part of it. And then we were just reading day before yesterday how Maharaj Parikshit, he met the cow and the bull and the Kali. Yeah. And then he asks the bull, and it's a straightforward question, you know, who did it to you? And he's standing on one leg. So, you know, there's a cause, there's an effect, and it's obvious. But then the bull says, well, I'm not sure, I don't know. And then he explains the causation, you know, how it's time, how it's the desire of the Lord, you know, so many layers. So in our mind, when we look at the cause and then we see the effect, it's pretty obvious, but in the third canto, it explains that it's actually quite complex. So we shouldn't rush into decisions because bull didn't do it.
Yeah, and he's Dharma, so he sets the standard. Yes. So that's the whole thing, is bhakti is independent of all these material mechanics, because It is the cause of all the original mechanics in the spiritual world. You know, so that's the ideas that Krishna and that mood, that affection that he has, that he is Ananda, it's independent. And then the sadhana chit support that. Right? And so he is a person. Is all these three things. That's why he is rasa. He is tattva. He is existence. Right? But you see, it's just the existence, just that Brahman level, then that has just one form. Right? It means, you know, it's just one aspect. And then the Paramatma is sat and chit. So therefore, then he is the, you know, controller of all these things. He is tattva, you know. And then when you learn tattva, you learn how he expanded creation, who's who, how he expanded, obviously things like this. And then it's sat and chit. And then when you're dealing with Bhagavan, then it's sat, chit, ananda. So you see, Bhagavan is the full manifestation because all these three fit together. What we know is that how they support, how sat and chit support ananda. Right? So you can't have Ananda on its own, like the Sahajiyas say. And you're not going to get Ananda by what the smartest say, of, you know, of having sat and chit. So that's the thing, is no, all three go together, but all three go together only in context of Krishna. Otherwise, you can't really put them together, because on the material platform, you can say, yes, no, we can put them together. But the point is that Ananda is our own. And we're saying, oh, we'll create this whole universe. So you can only do that if Krishna's pleased. So only through bhakti can you actually really be successful. That's why the great karmis, the great jnanis, it's only through applying bhakti into what they're doing that they actually get anywhere. Because Krishna has to be involved. He is the cause of creation. He is the one that, how you say, creation after creation expands the creation. He expands it just as he did before, right? That's all explained in the Purusha Shukta. Like that, you can see is that the Purusha Shukta in the first verses is actually explaining what has been explained in the Chatur Shloki. But it just, the Chatur Shloki is very exact. What the Purusha Shukta is, and telling it through a pastime of the original sacrifice by the Devas, you know, but. So Krishna, it's interesting. The first three shlokas is talking about, it's basically dealing with the first three shlokas of the Chatur Shloki. And then after that, then it goes into the secondary creation. So in the primary creation, you see it, you know, very straightforward there. Secondary creation, that's where they're doing the yajna and everything. And that's where because there's nothing else. They're using the Virat Rupa of the Lord as the sacrifice, and then the different aspects of that. But within that whole section, then it's explaining that, understanding this is the only way to come to that position beyond the mundane. And it says that quite a few times. So we see is then that fourth shloka of Chatur Shloki, then it's mentioning about that, you know, at all times, all places, all circumstances, this is how you have to deal. So they were seeing how the Lord is everything. Everything's coming from the Lord. It's made of the Lord. There isn't anything else, right? The jivas are there. But the point is the forms of the jivas, the gross and subtle forms of the jivas and all that are actually supplied by the Lord in his universal form, right? So we see is that essence of the Veda, how it's through that. So that's then what the point is that bhakti is alone at the conclusion of the scriptures, because without that understanding, without that particular action in those situations, you're not going to be successful. So then when the Bhagavatam, and so then Vyasadeva's, you know, explained all these different things, but he hasn't made it direct. In other words, it's mixed together. And so people aren't making the distinction there. So then the uniqueness that's coming out in the Bhagavatam is that bhakti is independent, means completely independent. Bhakti is what produces all the different things. It's a reflection of the spiritual world that we see here. That means all action is going on because of our devotion to ourselves. Well, the spiritual world is devotion to Krishna. That's its natural form, right? But it's not because I did it, I got the results. Because you see, people do an action, don't get a good result, or get no results. Someone else does the action, they get a great result. Or someone gets an action, they get a small result. Someone else performs the exact same action, gets a much bigger result. You know, it's all karma. So that's what Prabhu was talking about there, is that the Dharmaraj is looking at it, that no, it's much more complicated than just this fellow here is beating me with a stick. There's all what I've done before, what my actions are, what, you know, different things like that. And then you see. Does that make sense? You know, so one has to see all these different things, because ultimately the original cause is Krishna, and the formal cause is his energies. Yes.
So can we say that the Bhakti Shakti is all-pervading, and it has a natural form, and then it has, distorted forms here in the material world, but still everything is achieved and moved by Bhakti Shakti. Would it be correct?
Yes. Yeah, you could say. It's just like, I mean, you just look at it from the point of the internal potency then becomes transformed into the external potency. So it's the Shakti Parinama Bodh. You know, but the point is so that's why someone, unless they have, you know, they say, let's say a person, you know, he has devotion to his work or to his craft, you know, and it's because of that. So he's very attentive to the situation, what has to be done, what's the proper attitude, you know, if that's just himself and if there's other people involved and how he properly deals with them. So the more he sees that, the better the results he gets. So without that bhakti, it's not happening. It's just that this bhakti is misplaced, right? Then when you get into the Vedas, they give you more direction. And no, that bhakti has to be applied to those who are superior. You know, we see in the Upasana Khanda. But then of that is that, but that shakti of these that's more hidden is the shakti of the devatas and of everything is coming from Vishnu. So therefore you worship Vishnu. Therefore the sahajas, they're worshiping Krishna. The jnanis are the smartas, they're all worshiping Krishna because that's what the Shastra says. But they're still looking at it from their particular point of view. You know, they're approaching the samasti, the universal, from the vyasti, their own perspective. So that's the what is that? Aroha, you know, what do you call it?
Aropa.
It means you're going that, but yes, but that also means the path going up, the upward path instead of the descending aroha path. Yeah. So that it's still from there, no matter how they look at technically, it's still coming from themselves. Because you see is that, oh no, but you know, we know the philosophy and this and that, and so we're applying it and this and that. We're using, you know, we're trying to get the best for the society, but where are you starting? Right? So if you're starting from, okay, we're in this situation, this has happened in the material world, this is what the karmis are doing, this is what they're thinking, this is how they value it, this is how they look at it. So now looking at our situation, devotional service, what should we do? You know, and why should we consider them? Because somehow or another, because it's always the intellectuals. Are they considering the rednecks or the real simple people who are maybe very religious and go regularly to church and all that, but, you know, may not have a great job or a degree. They work down at the factory or something like that, you know, and stuff like that, drive a truck or, you know, work out on the oil rig or, you know, understand? So when they talk about, oh no, but society has this, they're only talking about the intellectuals and the professionals who they feel, you know, are successful. So in other words, their own value, then they're looking at the modern society. They want to be respected on that level with those particular persons. Then being respected by those particular persons, therefore they have to apply the value system of those particular persons. In other words, they're not willing to stand on their own, right? So their status is dependent upon the other status. So they're not actually taking a strong stand. So, yeah. And so then they want the benefit. Then they'll look at devotional service and our environment and what we do and the temples and devotees and how we dress and talk and eat and act. And then say, oh, we have to adjust all this because otherwise no one will appreciate us. No one will become a devotee, even though they became a devotee. And they were not on the platform of the people that they're respecting now and valuing. Not at all. You know, unless they were from previous generation before. And that means if they were born back in the 40s, 30s, you know, like that, when they and when they met Prabhupada, they may be looking at it slightly differently. You know what I'm saying? But if they were born, you know, later after World War II, and then they met Prabhupada, you know, there's a very good chance that, no, they didn't have a good social status or position. You know what I'm saying? They were one too young. They hadn't got there. They got caught up in the, you know, the counterculture movement and this and that. So Prabhupada, when he talks about, you know, gives an example of someone socially going crazy, he talks about the hippies. Right? You know, I mean, we have to remember Brahmananda and Satsarup actually had jobs. They went to work every day. They got paid. They were respected in society. They weren't living, living on the street. You know? So, you know, point being is that getting back to the thing is that the internal potency, then it will also transform. And when it transforms, then it becomes the ingredient cause. So that's what we do, the time and the place. And are the externals of our, the situation meaning us, but it means our gross and subtle body. It doesn't include the soul. Right? So the soul itself is the efficient cause. It's the one doing something. You know, desiring to do something, and then the ingredient cause carries it out. But that ingredient cause is the reflection or the transformation of the formal cause, which is the internal potency directly expanding from Krishna. So we have to see is that devotion is there, but it's in its perverted form. Then when you come in contact with the Vaishnavas, then you'll learn about it in its original form, from the original and the formal cause. Then you see it from that perspective. Then, yes, you engage the ingredient cause and the efficient cause in Krishna's service. We engage ourselves through what we have in Krishna's service. Then it doesn't take on that lower quality. So then it becomes real bhakti. Then it can give us situation and devotional service. While the other, that devotion that's there, because it's also a transformed form of devotion, it can only give you results in the material world. So dharma, artha, kama, moksha, that's all you can get. You can't go beyond. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Yeah, so it's a very important aspect here that one can cut between these things, because see what happens is they're starting with themselves, as we said before. So because they're starting with themselves, therefore they're looking at it in that way. Therefore it's inductive, right? That means they're appreciating all these other people that have all been trained in inductive thinking. You know, who's controlling that inductive thinking? That's another point. But the point is it's all inductive. So they say, oh, we know the philosophy, but you know, the time, place, we have to adjust things. But where did they start? They started from their own value system, their own desire to be appreciated by this particular group of karmis, you know, and that. And then they use that value system to therefore make the judgment on Krishna consciousness. So how to adjust the time and the place and, you know, the situation for attaining that goal of me being prestigious in society and be expected so I can walk around, you know, with my head held high that, yes, you know, this guy is, you know, an okay bloke. Right? But the other way, the deductive, is you start with Krishna. What is Krishna's desire? What does Krishna want? What did the acharyas indicate what that was? Therefore, what are the forms they gave to express that through? And so then you'll go for that. That's how then you'll judge what's there. And if that what they recommend, the best is not there, then you start adjusting to down to whatever is available. So the time, the place, the circumstance are included, but they're the last part of the equation. So you're going to start from Krishna. You're going to get down to the acharyas and all that. You're going to see what Prabhupada is saying. Then you're going to see what's the time and place. And then the final thing will be me as the circumstance. How am I involved? And so you can come out with very, very different results. And the point is you want to please Krishna. And pleasing Krishna is just something that must be done, whether others are pleased or not. If it, no, but all these others, they won't like it. Yes, that's there, but it's not necessarily as developed a level of bhakti, right? You know, we see is that someone, oh, he can't do something. Why didn't he? Means we see that the Brahmins in Vrindavan, after their wives went and met Krishna, and they came back, then by, you know, then by Krishna's blessings, then they were able to appreciate the position of their wives and how they had, you know, that devotion. They had given up everything to surrender to Krishna. And then they thought, yes, we should also do this. This is, you know, and then in analyzing, because they're Brahmins, they know the scriptures and know all that. So then by conscripture alone, bhakti alone is the conclusion of the scripture. Then they understand, yes, we have to surrender. We should also do all these things. But then what happened? So we'll go to Vrindavan. But then they thought, no, but then we're walking from here to Vrindavan. And then, you know, when you go move on the roads, then there's going to be, you know, the guards at, you know, the different places and all that. And then they're going to, where are you going? Why are you going? You know, this and that. And then they'll see, and then that'll get back to Kamsa, and Kamsa will make trouble for us. So then they didn't go. Right? So that's the whole point. So the more it's focused on Krishna, then the less of these troubles are there. The gopis just think, and they just go. And it works. You know? So that's the whole thing. You can say, oh, but I'm not on that level of advancement. I have to be practical. Yes. But be practical also in that, reduce your false ego. Understand that the position you're taking is a beginning stage of devotional service. Don't try to equate it with something advanced. And due to false ego, don't think that others can't do a more advanced level. So you have to understand is descending is the actual process that will get you success. As long as you're attached to the ascending, then where will the ascending be applied? It has to be applied here because you're identifying with the gross and subtle body and the situations that gross and subtle body that we call, you know, our situation. So then that means you run the risk of having to, you know, take birth in the material world to have that situation to perform your bhakti. Well, if it's descending, it's about Krishna and the devotees and all that. You're not bound by the material situation. Therefore, you can elevate yourself to that transcendental position because you have no necessity of what's here. You use what's here, but you're not dependent upon it. So the one, they're dependent, but they're trying to show how they're in control of it and they're independent. They're the independent thinkers. They're the universal thinkers. When they're not, they're totally... They're falling prey to the control of, you know, what's around them. But because of bhakti, you don't have to do that because as previously pointed out, there's bondage and liberation. You can't actually say that it's due to the gunas, right? Like that, because relationship with the gunas only comes from avidya. So when you get out of that avidya and come to the platform of vidya, then the relationship with Krishna, you're not working with the gunas, right? The whole thing still goes. You still have some bit sandini ladi, and you still have the, you know, the what is that, the jnana kriya and icha shaktis, right? You're still having the internal, external, and marginal. These three features are still there, but now they're being functioning in their original natural state rather than in that transformed state as the gunas. So it's not actually the gunas that are doing it. It's our consciousness. Therefore, we're put under that control. When we don't identify like that anymore, we don't have to act in that way anymore. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Okay. Jai Ho. How do you go? Okay. Okay, so then we're going through the four verses. Okay, if you are not able to free your mind from all material disturbances and cannot absorb it completely in Brahman, then perform all your activities as an offering to me without enjoying the fruits. Udriti, Śrīla Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakura. The Antakarana becomes purified by Nishkam Karma offered to me. Then, with a pure antakarana, one can practice jnana with a mixture of bhakti. One can concentrate with fixed mind on Brahman. With destruction of vidya, one attains bhakti, which surpasses vidya. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nasochati Nakankshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. Having attained the state of Brahman, being a pure soul, he does not lament at the loss of what he has attained, nor does he desire what he has not attained, and looks upon all beings as equal. He then manifests pure bhakti. Bhagavad Gita 18:54, right? So here when we're talking about, for us, this pure bhakti means this position where you're on that liberated platform, then that's where the pure bhakti can be manifest. But the point is before that, then that's what Baladev Vidyabhushan is talking about when he's talking about Anya Vilashita Shunyam, is that it's that platform of pure bhakti, or that platform in which you are appreciative of this platform of bhakti, and that's what you're trying to attain from the position that we find ourselves in. Right? In other words, pure bhakti is what we're trying to obtain. And so we will only consider doing those things that are going to be supportive of pure bhakti. We're including, so it may have the karma Mr. Bhakti, the jnana Mr. Bhakti. So now we're coming up to this point of the jnana Mr. And now we're taking it through till it comes to the point where all the things that you want to obtain, but they were attained through bhakti. Right? He does not lament at what he has not attained or desire what he's not attained. Loss of what he's obtained, because it's all for Krishna. And so since we're just trying to please Krishna, the variety of situations, what's there? Do you feel a loss? Like, let's say, you're sitting with friends, you know, let's say you invite some friends over in the evening and you're sitting in the living room like that. And everyone's sitting around talking, chatting and, you know, having a nice time. And then it's time for dinner. So then everybody gives up the position of being in the living room and goes to the dining room. So now are you lamenting that, oh, you know, but, you know, we're losing these nice seat and so comfortable. You can put your feet up. You can lay back. You can stretch your arms. When we go to the dining table, you have to sit more straight and formal. You can't stretch your arms out. You can't put your feet up on the table. You can't do all these different things, you know, so. Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't know, you know, like this, you know, does that make sense? You know, or if you're sitting there in the living room, you're thinking, oh, we're going to eat this and that, and you're not there. These things aren't favorable. They just get in the way. But when you give up the one, because now a different service is there. Now you're going to serve Krishna and associate with the Vaishnavas through honoring prasad. And then once honoring prasad's finished and you go rinse your mouth and all that, you go back and sit in the living room. Do you lament, oh, now we're not at the table anymore. We don't have all those nice things to eat. And you understand? So you're just moving from one situation to the next, and how that moves, and that's how then you serve Krishna. Whatever is there, then you have, and then it goes on. And then after that, then it goes. So as we mentioned before, good and bad is judged on the service to Krishna. It's not judged on something else. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the platform. Then that you're on that platform, and then you see the person interacts with the devotees, this, the situation, and he sees what's the best, you know, way to be situated here and serve Krishna. You know, just like, let's say if you're in the living room, you can talk a wide variety of subjects. But when you go into the dining room and at dinner, then you have a more limited, something pleasant, something light, something that's not going to create anxiety, something, you know, that's not, you know, terrible or this or that or all these different kinds of things. And then, you know, so whatever is the topic in the one place, then it's not a topic in another place. You know, does that make sense? You know, so after that, or let's say then after that, then everything's been more formal. Then let's say, you know, or let's say lunch or something. So then after that, then let's say you go out in the backyard. So all the kids are out there. Now you go into the backyard. The adults are sitting and talking and all that, but the kids are the ones running around. Now it's their scene. So now the adults are watching the kids, but at the same time talking amongst themselves. You know, they have some, you know, especially if they've been at it a while, then they have a little bit more, you know, ability. You know, it's like people can drive and talk at the same time. You know, not the ones I'm talking about who actually take their hand off the wheel or completely turn around and are not. I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about the ones that they can see there's a gap and they just look over just to kind of keep the conversation going. But I don't know. You see this one. Yeah, you know, I mean, I can't understand. They have no hand on the wheel. You know, they're going down the highway. You know, they, you know, whatever it is, you know, 100 kilometers an hour. Yeah, these guys are crazy. You know, and then they grab the wheel. It's just like, oh, my God. Yeah, we're not talking about that. So they're out in the backyard. And so being in the backyard, then, you know, then the kids are running around, they're playing. So they're keeping an eye. The kids are safe, that they're playing nicely, that they don't, you know, play in a way that's not good for them or, you know, stuff like that. They don't disturb the neighbors, you know, and we're not talking Sweden where the neighbors are 1 kilometer away. So everyone has to whisper because they might get bothered. We're talking about, you know, that they don't, you know, do, you know, ridiculously loud. So then in this, that it's a different situation. Now they're sitting out there and that, but they're also comfortable out there. So they were comfortable sitting in the living room, comfortable in the dining room. They were comfortable out in the backyard. And then, you know, it starts getting a little dark. They go back inside. There's a little bit more, you know, talking this and that, you know, like that. Maybe it's time the kids go to bed, you know, and then after that, now the conversation changes again, because before it was, you know, if the children are around, you have one conversation. Now the children are gone. Now the conversations go in a different direction again. So you see, as they change, then there's no problem. People will appreciate that. They'll appreciate that, you know, you have all these rooms. That's why before the houses had all these different, you had the living room, you had the dining room, you had the things like that. And so then that creates the different flavors, the different moods, and the different tastes. And so, and we appreciate that. So the same way is that depending on Krishna, arrangements Krishna makes, then sometimes you're in this situation, sometimes that, sometimes doing this service, sometimes doing that. You know, things are manifest. Krishna appreciates, like Krishna, he would have appreciated very much Govindaji temple being, you know, it's how it was, you know, the endeavor to construct it, you know, all the, you know, planning and work and all that to there. That devotion would have been nice like that. And then, you know, it's running and it's such a special arrangement for Govindaji. It was nice. But then when the environment changes and all that, and then Govindaji goes to Jaipur and then he's in a, you know, simple Haveli and that, and, you know, so many devotees coming and that, it doesn't have that same formal environment. Now it's a much simpler environment and all that. And then Krishna's there. It's not that he didn't appreciate what happened there. It's just that that's done. And so it's moved on to something else. There's some reason for him doing that. You know, does that make sense? So then whatever's the situation, that's what you are involved in. So we don't lament when the things adjust. We just, whatever is the new situation, we see it in connection with Krishna. That's the state of Brahman. He does not lament for at the loss of what he has attained, nor does he desire what he has not attained. So he's not, you know, lamenting for what's lost. He's not hankering for what he hasn't gained. It's whatever he has now, he's using. Now, for service, he thinks, okay, this would be nice. But if it comes within the purview of his service and his nature and the opportunity is there, then he'll acquire it. And if not, then he won't. Does this make sense? So that, and looks upon all beings as equal, right? So it's doing both of these. Because if it's just the first one, then it hasn't come up, you know, that path is like the practice of jnana. But then he sees all living entities equal, right? And he deals with them. And equal means he sees them all as Brahman. But the point is, situations are different. Everything's made out of earth, water, fire, air, ether, but depending upon the combination that's there. Then you deal with that earth, water, fire, air, and ether differently. You know? Your house, earth, water, fire, air, ether, you deal with in one way rather than out on the road outside the front gate, you know, and the earth, water, fire, air, ether there. You know what I'm saying? You can sit down in your house comfortably like that. You don't sit down on the road, you know, in front of, let's say, you know, the Bhaktivedanta clinic. You know, it's not what you do, even though it's the same earth. So that's not what it means. It means you deal. So therefore, you see all living entities equally, see them all as parts and parcels of Krishna. And then accordingly to how they, how they identify and all that, that's how you interact with them. Right? Like that. He then manifests pure bhakti, right? So that's the verse. By that bhakti, one then meditates on me with a mind free of contamination, right? Because before that, then there's contamination of this and that. But now that's free of that. By the pure knowledge arising from that bhakti, one then attains Sayuja Mukti. This is the sequence. If someone cannot ascend to the fourth stage of concentrating on Brahman with fixed mind, inferring impurity on the Antakarna, one should again perform Nishkam Karma offered to me for purification. Footnote 9. The stages are Nishkam Karma, Bhakti Misrgyana, Bhakti, and Sayuja. Right? One should offer all karmas, daily, periodic, and those for renounced persons to me, Sardar Pradarshini 11.11.22. Right? You know. Right. So here then for the devotees, then we see is that this Sayuja aspect is that you come to that level. Remember, there's four verses here Krishna's talking, that you're still only going to get there through going through the Nishkam Karma Yoga, then Bhakti Misrgyana, then, you know, coming to the stage where then you see everything, you know, meditation. The bhakti also is then there was also that part with meditation. Then that brings you to that liberated platform. So for the devotee, he's going to keep going, as it mentions before, as Jiva Goswami's pointed out, that he, having taught jnana, Mr. Bhakti, he teaches pure bhakti with jnana as his byproduct in four verses while discarding jnana. So in other words, this platform will just be discarded. So we see is that in that, that they've come to that platform of liberation, the four kumaras, and, but they're going to see the Lord, you know, out of that devotion, that bhakti, because that's still, you know, part of what they're doing. But now, but it's about the liberation. Then they come and they see about bhakti beyond Sayuja. So then they get interested in that. So we're showing here this stage by stage thing. So that's the whole point. The path of pure bhakti, you don't have to go through all these stages. You use, you know, bits of them are, since they're expanding from bhakti anyway, they have their natural position the acharyas recommend, but we don't have to go through all the details that the karmis and jnanis have to go through. Yeah. Yadi means certainly, as in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.4.10. The verses are spoken to Uddhava while Krishna thinks that he is desirous of jnana, although he is not. As stated, in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.4.14.4. Remember, he considers them the same as himself, so that means he's already on that transcendental position. And so then he's discussing with him in a way that will benefit others. You know, like Krishna talked to Arjuna. So he thinks that he's desirous of jnana, so he's interacting with him based on that platform. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4, certainly, Yadi, you cannot concentrate the mind of Brahman steadily. You should take shelter of bhakti yoga, which is served by all qualities, like jnana by its nature. So one of the qualities is jnana, right? Krishna first describes a gradual method. Offer all your activities to me. If because of lack of strength of previous bhakti, one desires Brahma jnana, but the mind cannot concentrate on Brahman, then one should offer one's actions to the Lord without other desires. So anytime you see is, oh, I can't concentrate on Krishna, then Krishna gives the thing. Is then the results of your activity should be given to Krishna. Someone will say, I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I'm not, you know, meditating on Krishna all day. But the thing is are you offering results of your actions to Krishna? Everything you do you see that the result of that's for Krishna, even your chanting? And if not, then that's what where you should start. You know, it means the chanting goes on. But we see is that in consciousness, we haven't come to the point where we can completely focus on Brahman, which is the holy name, right? Because Brahman means the transcendental position, right? You know, Sat Chit Ananda, that's Brahman. Viti. In the previous Anucheta, it was recommended that a person desiring Brahma Gyan should take shelter of Bhakti Yoga, right? So he's talking about someone who wants Brahma Gyan, that he takes shelter of Bhakti Yoga. The next Anucheta disregards the process of Jnana for those who are qualified for Bhakti. In other words, someone who's not qualified for Bhakti, then this attachment to Jnana, then they can do. So you see is that those are there in the platform of that Jnana, they can only function on that level. So then you're trying to add Bhakti to that level. But those who have that faith in Krishna can take it up. Even if we're talking about the beginning stage, the Kamala Shraddha, they have qualifications for that, not for Jnana or not for karma. Right? So therefore, since karma and Jnana are anyway byproducts of Bhakti, their performance of direct Bhakti Yoga, then the natural secondary ingredients of karma and Jnana that will be useful for their position and their realization is naturally there. Right? So in other words, how are we getting these? We're getting it from Bhakti. We're not getting it from karma and Jnana. Like that, because one, it's more difficult, and two, you have to have more material piety to function on those levels. But even you do, it's not more efficient. Direct bhakti by the associate. So the one is coming from your piety. The other is coming by the association of devotees. Right? So that's the important element. It is stated that a person who has natural faith in hearing about the topics of the Lord is qualified for pure bhakti. It doesn't mean we're on that platform, but they're qualified to progress in that path, because pure bhakti is extended and given that whole extension to be able to function in that way, right? So you don't have to be going from the path of, you know, one's qualifications. So this idea that, oh no, we have to, you know, please all these people who have these mundane qualifications, you know, because I want to be respected on that platform. Then the difficulty is there is that then we're seeing is that it's the material qualifications that are qualifying us for bhakti when it's not. Those qualifications actually come from bhakti alone is producing them, right? But we want them in this transformed state. So how will that help us? If we're looking at the mundane qualities, how will they help us? Unless we see it in connection with Krishna, it won't help us. That, you know, it'll, you know, there's some mixes there, but we're talking about the guy at the university or, you know, some intellectual and, you know, you talk to him and he sees something, this and that and all that. He starts to look at it from that angle of, you know, philosophy and all that. So that becomes that he's starting to mix some bhakti with his platform, you know? So then that aspect, then it's there. He's more favorable. Like I remember speaking to some professors. They've been acquainted with the devotees for, you know, over 20 years at that time I talked to them. And, you know, they would come and, you know, discuss many things. And I remember this person was a physicist. And so he was discussing the concept of time and space because they don't know how to deal with it. So much, you know, they come up with their ideas, how they work with it, but they really don't know what they're dealing with. And so you're discussing different things with him. So he kind of has that idea. He knows that there's something beyond. And so he'll add a little bit of that to what he's doing. You know, and that way it'll help him progress. But until he, you know, adds more of that to it than that, and then uses, okay, his position and adds that, then it becomes properly that jnana misa bhakti. Otherwise, it's bhakti misa jnana. And then it becomes like that. Then he comes to the stage where now he can see the transcendental, the position. But for the devotees, is that they're qualified because they have faith, natural faith in hearing about the topics of the Lord. Therefore, then that's their qualification. So then it's just what situations they're in. They see what they can use for Krishna. And they deal accordingly, according to what's recommended, how you deal with those situations for Krishna. You know, that's what they're doing. So it's reversed. It looks the same, but it's reversed. And so therefore, then you see is that the effect is different. The effect gives that pure bhakti. The other one will bring you to Sayuja, or if it's karma, you know, nishkam karma, then it'll take you to the heavenly planets. So one has to see is that you have to see it based on pure bhakti. That's then the drive on why you're doing it. You may not be on that platform. You have attachments. You engage these things, but it's about that. You have a question? Oh, just okay. Okay. And such a person, you know, qualified for pure bhakti, should always engage in hearing, chanting, remembering, and enacting the Lord's pastime. So we see hearing, chanting, and remembering. So you go, it has this natural form, how it goes up there. Hearing, chanting, remembering, enacting Lord's pastimes, or you say the name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes. It goes through these things. Right? It's a natural stage. Anucheta 72. Shradhalur mat tata shrinvan subhadra loka pavani. Pavanihi Gayan Gayan Anusmaran Karma Janma Cha Bhinayan Muhu Mararte Dharma Karmartan Acharan Mad Apashrayaha Labate Nishchalam Bhaktim Mayudhava Sanatane. A person with natural faith should constantly hear topics about me, should sing and remember my topics, which purify the world, and enact my exploits and birth. He should perform dharma, kama, and artha as service to me. Having taken shelter of me, he will attain permanent bhakti to me, whose form is permanent. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.23.24. Right. So here that those paths before that we see, oh, but you know, this and that you see, this is more in line with what we know and what we can do. Does that make sense? So it's not these ones before that's, it gives a gradual thing, but that's a slow process. And then this is the quick process. Udriti, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Having described Jnana Yoga in 4.5 verses, Krishna now describes Bhakti Yoga until Srimad Bhagavatam 11.12.15. The ending on Shraddha-luhu indicates a natural faith. This excludes a mixture of jnana or karma. Placing this word at the beginning indicates that such natural faith is the qualification for bhakti. It will be said. It means your natural faith, it means this is excluding that. It means you don't need that. It's just you have that faith. You may, the conditioning, there's aspects of karma and jnana, but it's not the identity. It maybe feels you work in. So the stronger that identity that I am a intellectual or I am a practical person, then you know, it pulls it back. It just weakens the position. But the natural position is there. It will be said. Okay. Then quoting from Bhagavatam, if by unexpected association with devotees, one develops faith in my topics, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, he is qualified for bhakti and will achieve perfection. Right? He's not very disgusted with, nor very attached to. Because if you're disgusted, you can't function. If you're attached to, then you're going to be completely absorbed and can't actually function. So one has that balance. So you see already the aspects of jnana are already there. Because you become, through the association of devotees, you have faith in the tapas of the Lord. So you're not too disgusted. It means you understand the material world's a problem. At the same time, you're not attached to the material things, but you work and you're comfortable to work in those fields. Continuing. As long as one does not become detached from daily and periodic duties, or has not awakened his faith in hearing topics about me, one must perform one's prescribed duties of varnashram. Right? So then, according to that, then he is in that position. So to that degree that you can do. So we see is that when Prabhupada was that was giving that aspect, he's giving that path of pure bhakti and just giving only the facilities necessary for that, without much attachment or without much facility. The more time you can see is the devotees actually required more. So he said, we need to introduce this Varnashram. You know, so he's already talked about it in his books and all that. And so then it's just a matter of expanding that because there is more attachment, right? There is more attachment to their daily and periodic duties. There is attachment to the aspects of jnana. You know, they have some aspects in the material world they're very disgusted with, you know, and stuff like that. So therefore then they use those, they perform their duties there. But the point is the essential point here is that faith in Krishna, and that is there, then everything else can be accomplished. It may not be a major, it means in volume of time, it may not be a major aspect, but the point is that it's there. If we talk about it, one has the faith. Then when you're not like in the class, you hear you have that faith, yes, you may go out and start your daily activities and then get distracted. But the point is if you talk about it, there's no doubts. What you can see is some, you talk about it, they have doubts. So then those persons need to be performing their prescribed duties. And unfortunately, then many of those have, you know, with their own modern perspectives, has rejected the concept of Varnashram duties. So this idea of what I should do is not defined by them, as we discussed earlier. It's defined by those particular members of the outside materialistic society that they respect and value. They set the standards, and that will never be progressive for a devotee. Never. You know, you can say yukta vairagya, but where's the yukta and where's the vairagya? So it doesn't match. Does that make sense? So one has to be able to have that faith, then one can engage just how much one needs. But if one wants beyond that, then one has to do it through the duties and all that, and still cultivate the bhakti. Yes? No? So then Charya says, thus the qualification for bhakti is different from qualification for jnana or karma. Bhakti is that natural faith in the Lord and his name, form, qualities, pastimes, while the qualification for jnana is that intellectual ability and detachment, and karma is that piety and willingness to work, to do everything in a pious way, exacting as it should be done. Bhakti means it's faith in Krishna. Yes? Good? Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai.